Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and this is your DFS preview for this week's BMW Championship, the second stop of the FedEx Cup playoffs and the penultimate tournament of the season. Joining me to break it all down, as he does every single week, it's Greg Ducharme. What up, Greg?
I can't believe we're here, right? I can't believe it's the BMW Championship right now. This year, for many of us, it's felt like an extremely long year, but the fact that we're here in the playoffs right now, it's mind-blowing to me. I can't believe it's already the end of the season.
It feels less final because we're not going to miss a week, right? Like, we are literally
going right to the U.S. Open.
Yeah, like, it feels less final than it does, but I agree. It is weird. It's going to be even weirder next week when there's only 30 in the field, and we'll talk about that. But, like, it'll be – yeah, it's definitely weird, but at the same time, it feels like we're just picking up momentum.
It's just been a crazy year. But last week was great. I assume this week is going to be just the same. A fascinating tournament. You got a bunch of great players playing great. This is going to be fun.
All right, let's get into this. But don't forget – you can watch us on YouTube. So YouTube at First Cut Pod. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Same thing at First Cut Pod. And the course. This is kind of the big thing, Greg. Olympia Fields, the North course there. I think there's actually 4 courses on site. We haven't really seen this. The last time that we've seen it on the PGA Tour was, 2003 U.S. Open. Jim Furyk won that. 1925. I think Walter Hagen won the U.S. Open or a PGA Championship.
Yeah, I didn't see that one live. I think I DVR'd that one, but I didn't see anything live.
You know what? We didn't have ShotLink out there yet, unfortunately. So we don't have the metrics from it. But apparently it was great. It was the best. There's some amateur events that we'll get to in a little bit about this. But the big things for this week: 70 players in the field. There is no cut. So barring your WD, barring your DQ, you are getting all 4 rounds out of your golfers, which is a nice, interesting wrinkle. The other wrinkle is, of course, that only the top 30 are going to move on. So there are scenarios, like we'll talk about. Tiger Woods, for example, has to finish 6th or better if we're going to see him. So you might see some guys put their foot on the pedal, try to hit shots they normally wouldn't try to hit. That can backfire, Greg. We might see a 29 coming in, a 28 coming in, or a 38 coming in, or a 39 coming in because of what these guys have to do.
This happens in no-cut events anyway. Players tend to, especially when they're not near the lead on Thursday, the players who are kind of in the chase pack, they have a tendency of getting a little more aggressive. They know that on, say, Friday afternoon, they know that they're going to be playing Saturday, and they go for it. And it can go the other way in a hurry. I don't know about you, Rick, but when I'm looking at leaderboards, I always like scrolling down to the bottom, see what's going on down there. And these are the kind of events where you see a big separation from the top and the bottom for exactly that reason. So it's always a good time. It's going to be really interesting to see who kind of gets off to that good start. Getting off to a good start, I believe, in these events is even more important because you have a tendency to force it afterwards.
I always start at the bottom of the leaderboard. I sweat leaderboards bottom up. So I start at the bottom and I go, please don't see anybody that I have in my lineups. Please don't see anybody that I have bets on. I scroll up. And then I get to like even par or one over, and it's like Thursday morning. And I'm like, okay, if my guys are here, they're still alive. They haven't played themselves out of it yet. And then I play this mental game until I get to the top.
That is quite an entertaining way to leaderboard. So I don't do it that way. I look at the top, and then, you know, the best thing is you got to just favorite your guys, right? You favored them all. They're right up top. Tells you exactly where they stand. Sometimes that's not quite as fun, though.
Yeah, because then you have to unfavorite them when they miss the cut so that you don't see it all weekend. Like, I don't want to look at this all weekend, but
Man, last week I had a couple of lineups that were like I was big on Harris English last week. I was pretty big on DJ, as I know you were too. And I had a bunch of 1-2 lineups, and with they just also were tagged with a couple of missed cuts. So that was definitely a little frustrating when you have, you know, three guys in the top five and then three missed cuts. It's like, oh man.
I just got to say, going back to watching the leaderboard, nothing is better than whenever you have 10 matchup bets out and you forget to unfavorite a guy. And then you wake up like 2 weeks later to like Brian Harman has started. You're like, wow, I was really betting on Brian Harman 2 weeks ago, huh?
Yeah, you're like, I'm a sick human for having Brian Harman favorited at any point in this world. Yeah, that's so good. Okay, so I mentioned the fact that Olympia Fields, which is a par 70, 7,366 yards on the scorecard, bent grass greens, usually plays host to some collegiate events, some amateur events, and our very own Eric Patterson, friend of the pod, has actually compiled a list of notable finishes the last few years. And this is pretty helpful, Greg. So just to kind of recap here, 2018, Matthew Wolf won this event, the NCAA Illini Invitational. He won it. Morikawa finished second. Victor Hovland finished sixth. 2017, both Wolf and Morikawa tied for 13th. In 2016, Cameron Champ won it all. And in 2015, Maverick McNeely won it. Who is Clark? Wyndham Clark? Who is that? Who's Clark?
It's got to be Wyndham Clark.
There's not another Clark.
Must be Wyndham Clark from Oregon.
It's got to be Wyndham Clark. John Rahm finished ninth. Scotty Scheffler and Cam Champ finished 22nd. So this, I want to parlay this into a conversation about guys who, like, when there's so few guys who have played this course, who does that help, if anyone?
It's a very interesting, because it's not necessarily, look, you're talking about a college event. Now, I know these players are really hot right now, so they're very interesting to look at, and they're definitely going to be popular. And this may be the reason why, but I'm not sure that, I mean, it's a completely different tournament, right? Is six under par? Is that score, which won a couple college events, is that going to finish inside the top 20 this year? Probably not. So it's a completely different field. It's almost like everybody's got to go relearn it. Now, the advantage for those players is they've seen it. They're a little more familiar with it. So it gives them maybe a slight leg up. But who does it benefit? I think it benefits longer hitters. I think it benefits guys that are going to give themselves shorter approach shots into greens because they don't know. So how can you take tact out in essence? So I think guys are going to be we'll see how they understand how to tact it. But if you're a guy like Bryson DeChambeau and you're able to hammer the ball around this golf course, reach par fives in two that other players can't reach in two. If you're able to do these things and take advantage of some small advantages, then all of a sudden you can separate yourself pretty quickly. So I would say it is an advantage to the longer hitters rather than the guys that are normally really strategic.
I was on HQ with Doug Bell, I guess it was Sunday night, and he was mentioning Joey LaCava is headed to Olympia Fields on the charter, but Tiger's headed home to Jupiter. He's going home to Jupiter, and he's not coming back until, I think, like Tuesday night. He'll probably play nine holes Wednesday, and that'll be it. But the idea that, you know, there's a lot of guys are going to be kind of behind the eight ball on preparation because a lot of them haven't seen it before. This might be the kind of week to just go home, rest, and recuperate. Speaking of Tiger, it's Tiger, Charles Howell III, Paul Casey, and Adam Scott are the only guys who were in the field for the 2003 U.S. Open, which, I mean, I'm not looking towards anything from 17 years ago, but that was a nice little note that I saw.
Way too long ago. I mean, all these players, they're hitting at different distances. The golf course, I'm sure, is very different. But, you know, hey, at least you've seen it. You have some sort of memory. Nobody really in this group played any good. Tiger was the best finisher at tied 20th. But, I mean, Tiger in 2003, tied 20th wasn't necessarily a strong finish for him at that time. So
that's true.
Nobody really agreed with
this. A top 20 this week, we'd be like, wow, Tiger top 20. Top 20 in 2003 would have been like sound the alarms, I think.
Yeah, the only thing – that may be the year he was kind of switching from Butch over to Hank. I think that was 2003. So he may have been kind of starting a swing change that would be the only thing I could think. But still, even though not a great week for Tiger.
He won 5 times in 19 events in 2003. So pretty solid year for the cat. All right, $10,000 range led by Dustin Johnson, who was playing video games last week at TPC Boston, 11,500. John Rahm, flat 11,000. Justin Thomas, 10,800. Bryson DeChambeau, 10,600. Rory McIlroy also flying in Tuesday night, I think, 10,300. Webb Simpson, 10,000. That is the entire $10,000 range. Greg, what are we doing?
Well, the curveball to this is DJ, because you know we never pick guys to win back to back.
It cannot happen.
But at the same time, he played inspired golf. He played some really inspired golf. So the question is, if he goes out there and it doesn't go the way that it went, which it's not going to go the same way it went last week at the Northern Trust, right? He's not going to shoot those kind of scores. And if it's kind of a sluggish start, is that going to get DJ frustrated, or is he going to continue chipping away at it? Because the positive for DJ is how well he's hitting it. I mean, he missed, what, one green over the weekend? He shot 63, 64 over the weekend. How do you not choose that guy? He was the best player in all aspects of the game last week. So, and I do believe distance is going to be a really big advantage this week. So how do you – the course seems to set up for him. I like DJ on a course that nobody really knows, especially when it's playing long the way it's supposed to be. Hitting his irons beautifully. He's got his fade back. There's all signs point to DJ, except he won last week. So is there going to be a little bit of a hangover from that? Is there going to be a little – well, you know, it was so easy last week, and now it's not quite as easy. Is that going to bother him? So for me, I'm looking at Justin Thomas and Bryson DeChambeau this week. Those are my top two guys. I just have some unfair questions about DJ, and I don't like picking guys to win back to back. So I think my top two plays are JT and Bryson.
We can talk about those guys real quick on Dustin Johnson. I think it's fair. I think he's fine. I think I'll have my fair share of him. I'm not like super stoked to play him. I just think that from a more strategic standpoint, and I think you nailed it earlier, Greg, like if you're chasing DJ because you think he's going to do what he did again, it's not going to happen. Like, he's not going to shoot 30 under. He's not going to win this golf tournament by 11 shots. Can he contend? Absolutely. If you look at the Vegas odds, he's essentially a coin flip to finish in the top 10. Half the time he'll finish in the top 10, half the time he won't. So, like, what do you need out of him? At least the top 5, probably. So I just want people to kind of pump the brakes on expectations, because you're not going to get another 11-shot victory. He might be able to pay himself off, but, you're asking a lot. You're asking a lot of it. JT, let's talk about JT, because I also like him. I think very much in a vacuum, he might be the best all-around player on tour. He might be the best player on tour. Like I am a big believer in Justin Thomas's game. He hemorrhaged strokes on the greens last week. And historically, when he putts that poorly, he usually does not do it 2 weeks in a row, even to the tune of like winning the next event, finishing second the next event. I mean, it's kind of incredible that he is able to reset, refocus the next week and just start rolling putts in.
What do you think is the most important? What areas statistically, what type of player are you looking for this week to have success?
Unfortunately, I wish we have literally zero data on Olympia Fields, but based on kind of comp courses and other situations, I mean, it's kind of long for a par 70. It's on the longer side of things. Yeah. So, I mean, you're going to need to drive the ball far, likely. And then usually the way that I comp this out, I think it's going to be a lot of a second shot course, right? Like if you can hit it far and you hit your irons well, like that's, I mean, week in and week out, a great starting point, but that, and that's also what, I don't know, Justin Thomas happens to do very well.
Yeah, I'd say. I mean, his iron play is so good. That's one of the reasons why I like him most events, most weeks. He's the best iron player on tour. That maybe Tiger would give him a run for his money if we saw him more, but I consider JT to be the best iron player on tour. So what does that mean? It means he's going to always have great birdie looks, and even out of the rough, he's great out of the rough. You remember last year at Medina, the rough was definitely a little longer, but he torched it. It didn't really matter. So JT is definitely a favorite, and I feel like we're getting him at a little discount. For him to be under $11,000 is, I feel like, a great buy. I feel like it's a great price. So I'm all in on JT this week too.
Since the restart, he leads the field in strokes gained tee to green, 1.9 per round. He's going to go as far as that putter allows him to, which in theory is a very good thing. Bryson DeChambeau, you mentioned, Greg, and I think you are probably warmer on him than I am. We saw a pretty bad performance out of Bryson DeChambeau last week. The game, I don't like to say the game was in shambles. I've used that before. It's backfired, but like it didn't look good for two rounds for Bryson.
He really struggled with the putter, and he struggled with his irons as well. But the irons haven't been great all year. I think we kind of are forgetting that Bryson just came and tied fourth at the PGA Championship in his start prior to this one. So for him to go out and miss a cut, he shot even par. It was clearly frustrating and disappointing, especially at a place where he's won before. I think he was disappointed, but I don't see him, kind of like JT, I don't see him putting that poorly again. He's been an extremely consistent putter all season, especially since the restart. So I look at that as a big positive, and I think you're going to see a spike in that. And this seems like his pricing seems very biased. He's coming off a missed cut. He's routinely been the top one or two guy price-wise, and all of a sudden we see him down as the fourth price guy. So at 10-6, I think he's a great buy. And I think his advantage is accentuated this week. Two par fives, both the par fives are over 600 yards on the golf course. At least that's what the reports say. We'll see how they set it up. But he's going to be one of very few who can reach these holes. And all of a sudden that advantage extends past what it was last week, where everybody could reach par fives and everybody could reach the short drivable fourth.
The additional narrative around Bryson is like, if you give anybody like 5 days to like tinker and figure out what went wrong the week before, like I kind of trust Bryson more than a lot of other guys to figure it out, or at least try to. So you can kind of
count on that. That's definitely a good point. You know, he'll be working on that kind of stuff. The iron play and the putting, I think that's where he'll be really honing in on.
Can I make a quick case for Rory McIlroy?
Yeah, you absolutely.
Just a little one, because let's be real here. Rory McIlroy, for all intents and purposes, since the restart, he's been pedestrian. He has been closer to tour average than he has ever been. We've heard the comments about maybe not getting as much energy from the crowds that are not out there, and he hasn't been able to figure that out yet. But the one thing that has kept him as a pedestrian for the first 7 weeks or however many starts he's made was the irons. He was literally like tour average with his irons. Last week, gained over 5 strokes on approach, by far his best in the restart. Now, the putting was terrible, one of his worst events of his career. This is one of those situations where if you think that from week to week that irons carry over, which I tend to think that they do, and the numbers tend to think that they do, and that putting is much more variable, so that would bounce back, like that gives you a recipe for Rory to make at least more noise than he's been making. And that might not be a lot, Greg, because he's been really bad. Like, he's been, by his own standards, really, really bad. So maybe it's like a top 20 finish. I don't know if he like goes out and wins this thing, but I'm feeling more optimistic this week than I have in a long time.
I definitely have concerns about Rory. The iron play, that's a great point. It's a great catch there on the improvement in that area. But the putting to me is a big concern. And I know how volatile putting can be, but for Rory, this has been a weakness for the past couple of years. This has been what has held Rory back from major championships. It's been something he's worked really, really hard on with his coach, Brad Faxon. And right now, it's not in great form. And so I don't see that as being a variable, like a volatile statistic where he could pop off. Whereas Bryson, he's been a great putter all year. He had a bad putting week last week. Justin Thomas has been an up and down putter throughout the year. So it's much more likely that those two players have a hot putting week. With Rory, I haven't seen anything to indicate that he's close to having a hot putting week. So I definitely have my concerns there. But you're right with the way that he hits it. And if he's found something with the irons, he can definitely contend even with a cold putter. It's just a matter of, well, how cold is it going to be?
Yeah. And I mean, he's also like trying out different drivers in Jupiter this week. Like Rory's got to figure it out. $9,000 range. Xander Schauffele leads it off at 9,900. Daniel Berger is at 97. Colin Morikawa, friend of the pod, 9,500. Jason Day, 9,200. Scotty Scheffler, this guy, flat 9,000. Always a small $9,000 range on DraftKings. Greg, who's your favorite?
Daniel Berger. Daniel Berger is, he's up to 13th in the world now. And I've been saying this for quite a while now. He is a player whose his fingerprint is this kind of play. This is who he is. This is a guy who was rookie of the year in a class with Justin Thomas. He is a stud. He's a really, really good player. And he had a wrist injury in 2018, and that kind of derailed him for a little while. This restart that he's having isn't like a, it's not a fluke. This isn't like just a guy catching lightning in a bottle. This is really who Daniel Berger is. And I think he believes he can make a real run at the FedEx Cup. And so, you know, I look at how well-rounded his game is. We talk about JT and deservedly so, and how well-rounded he is. Well, Daniel Berger's right there. I mean, he's something like 13th in putting. He's fourth in scoring average. He's, I want to say he's third in strokes gained total. He is unbelievable in all areas of the game, and week after week after week he continues to perform, and he doesn't care what the field looks like. I gotta think he's going to be a contender.
He is not only the best player in terms of strokes gained total in the restart by far, 2.38. He's the only guy over two. I also, since you said like he's been playing better than this, like longer than this, and I completely agree with you, I just went back to February real quick. So since the Waste Management, he's still the best player on tour in that span by a half a stroke. The gap gets even bigger. By the way, Harris English, shout out to Harris English, second on that list since Waste Management. Like, these guys, these two guys, I don't care if it is flying under the, I don't know if it's flying under the radar. I mean, we talk about it every single week, but they are so good right now. It's like, I can't even describe it. I'm trying to use the numbers because I don't have the adjectives to describe how good these guys are right now.
Do you think they're both underpriced?
So, okay. So Berger is 97. And English is 83. Like, yes, English probably is. When you look at, you know, he's with Adam Scott, he's with Matthew Wolf. Like, I love Matthew Wolf this week, but him and Harris English are kind of in two different situations at the moment. I think that Berger is a little bit underpriced. Like, I think you could easily get him into the 10K range, but I would never get him over. I don't think you can put him over DJ, Rom, JT, Bryson. I mean, you could make a real case. He could be the fifth highest priced golfer here above Rory McIlroy.
If Rory McIlroy, well, let me put it this way. If Daniel Berger had been playing the way Rory McIlroy has been playing, he would be maybe in the low sevens.
Yeah.
Right. And if Rory was playing the way Daniel Berger was playing, he would be the highest priced guy.
$12,000. Yeah,
it'd be unbelievable. People would be raving about it. They'd be salivating from their mouths because of how good Rory's play. But that's Daniel Berger. And so yeah. I look at that as a definite steal and a must play in this range.
The only, not the only other guy, but I mean Berger. Yes, love him, and I have no issues with it. Scotty Scheffler has been awesome. And I know he's getting a lot more camera shine. We're seeing him in the final group more often. We're seeing him on the coverage. But, I mean, I think he's now cementing himself as the PGA Tour Rookie of the Year, at least making that push over Victor Hovland at the moment. But since in the last 4 weeks, that's when he's really gone on this hot run. No golfer has been better from tee to green than Scotty Scheffler has been. And also, we talk about this a lot, it's the birdie or better percentage, man. His fantasy scoring is so much more valuable than his actual finishing position in the tournament is. He might finish T12 here and be the sixth highest scoring player on DraftKings.
It's fascinating. And you know, I mean, he shot, obviously, 59 this past week. But he also did that, like, the week before.
He has two 59s, like, recently.
When I read that a guy had shot 59 and didn't know it until they got in the car, that is a great sign. It means we talked about this a little bit with about DJ, about realizing where you are in a tournament. Kyle and I were talking about it last night, and you as well, Rick. And so Scotty Scheffler is a guy clearly who's not afraid of holding his breath, right? He's not going to read the paper. He's not going to say, oh, if I make another birdie here, I could get to six under through it. He doesn't do that. He just continues to march on and make birdie after birdie after birdie. So look, because of the way fantasy scoring works, Scotty's always a good play. Is he getting to that point where his price is kind of catching up to that? And is he going to lose any value because his price is starting to climb and people are starting to realize how good he is?
I think the price is still fine. I just think his ownership is going to be higher. I just think people are recognizing him more frequently. So I think the price is fair. I just think he's going to be one of the more popular.
Does that concern you?
No, because I'm not going to let one golfer's ownership dictate whether he's in my lineup or not. I'll just pair him with other guys that I think are going to be a little bit lower owned. The only, and this is very narrative based and we will have no idea about this, but, I don't know if he's going to have his bag man this week, but I thought it was interesting when he was saying like, those guys have been together for every shot except for like five Korn Ferry Tour events. And Scotty did say after the round, like, yeah, that was weird. You know, he's been helping me read putts. He's been helping me. Like, he's been the last voice I hear. I don't know if that's going to be an issue. It's going to be different for him. I'm sure he can find a very experienced, great caddy for this week if his isn't ready to go. But, like, level of concern, 0 through 10 on who his actual caddy is this week.
It's probably somewhere between 3 and 5. Definitely a concern, but it's something we don't see very often. I mean, I don't remember ever seeing a caddy have to be subbed in that late in a round in one of the final groups. I mean, it was definitely a very bizarre circumstance. So you don't know how it's going to affect him. But look, the guy plays, he was just playing college golf 2 years ago. So he's comfortable playing without a caddy. It's just something that may take a little bit of adjusting. So there is definitely a concern, but it's on the lower side for me.
So that leaves us with the fades, which I think we're both fading Jason Day. That great stretch of golf, Greg. I mean, it was four consecutive top seven finishes, comes to a screeching halt at the Northern Trust, where the numbers weren't good. The eye test wasn't all that good. The miscut got him out of there early. Seems like my big thing here, and I'd love your take on this. I just like the other guys a lot more. This isn't necessarily like, I don't think Jason Day is ever going to bounce back. I just like the other guys more.
Yeah, this is a really hard one to find a fade. I mean, like, we've basically been very high on everybody else. We know on this podcast we're always very high on our friend Colin Morikawa. So it's a little bit of a challenge, and Day sticks out. He's the one guy that missed the cut last week. He's the guy who Morikawa missed the cut too. But last time Morikawa missed a cut, he won the next week. So this is a hard one to find a real fade. I would say Jason Day kind of sticks out in this range.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. It's a small range and somebody's got to be a fade. Somebody's the odd man out. All right. I want to get to the 8K range. We're going to get into some value here, but first we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
Did you know more than 75% of Americans will experience foot pain in their lifetime, but only 10% will seek out a solution for that pain? Spoiler alert, your feet don't have to hurt. And I know foot biomechanics can be complex, but solving foot pain should be simple. It's a signature orthotic shape of the super feet insoles that give you the comfort and support where you need it the most. It redistributes and reduces stress and strain on your entire body. Think about those long walks on a golf course and how uncomfortable your feet can get. Well, they don't have to. And Superfeet has helped millions of people worldwide experience the life-changing magic of comfy, pain-free feet. When your feet feel good, so do you. It is one of the most important parts of your overall health and well-being. And for a limited time, Superfeet is having its biggest sale of the year. Go to superfeet.com to save 25% off site-wide and get free shipping. Hurry, sale pricing ends June 5th. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance Giants jogger, because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there. And I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to viori.com/first. That's VUORI.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. viori.com/first and discover the versatility of Viori clothing.
And we're back. Don't forget, if you want your questions answered about fantasy, betting, whatever, what Greg eats for breakfast, just leave a 5-star rating and review in Apple Podcasts. Leave your question there, and we will be sure to get to it. Greg, what do you eat for breakfast?
Depends on the day. So sometimes a banana. I eat a very light breakfast if I do it all. And what's interesting about breakfast is this is what you use to break your fast. So the break of your fast
is correct.
Food, it can also be, we were talking about Phil Mickelson in the break. I drink coffee. So many mornings I have just coffee for breakfast and I eat a little bit later on in the day. So sometimes I eat nothing. Other times I'll eat a banana. I'll eat some fruit. I try to do that. Most mornings it's some sort of fruit.
Oh, okay. I'm a true Californian millennial. I like avocado toast. How about that?
Yep. You're in the right place.
Right up my alley. All right. 8K range. Led off by Patrick Cantlay, Patrick Reed, the two Patricks. The bottom end of it, Louis Oosthuizen, the bubble boy, number 70, knocked out friend of the pod, Doc Redman. He's in. Billy Horschel, the other $8,000 golfer. Greg, I could live in this range. I love this range.
It's a really strong range, and there's a lot of variation. And we've been seeing that with the kind of a slim 9K range, which has been a theme, at least since the restart.
Yeah.
We've had some heavy 8K ranges. So there's a lot to choose from here. First guy that I go to in this list is Tony Finau. And I love Tony Finau this week. One, I think he's due.
Shocker.
I think Tony Finau needs something. But anyway, that's beside the point. Look at these past finishes. The Memorial, he comes in eighth. He comes in tied third at the 3M. Tied 65th in Memphis, not so great. Tied fourth at the PGA. Missed the cut last week. 72-69 wasn't enough to get it done. There may be a little bit of a trend here. I think he's ready for another really good finish, a race for the FedEx Cup. How crazy would it be if he was the FedEx Cup champion with just one win on the at the end of the year? That would be nuts. But besides the point, I think the distance that he hits the ball is going to be really important this week.
It would be nuts. Tony's fine. Listen, okay, I don't like to take – remember that we have event history and course history. We have zero course history, zero. Event history we have plenty of. Tony Finau, 7th 3 years ago, 8th 2 years ago, 4th last year at the BMW Championship. Now, while you cannot say this is a good course fit for him, you can start to look at the other factors about the BMW Championship, Greg. Like, it's always the same time of year. It's always the top 70. There's no cut. The field strength is always very similar, right? Like, you can garner some things from it, even though it's not the same course.
It's typically in similar parts of the country. There have been exceptions, but it's very often in the Chicago area. Maybe it was it at like Aronimink 1 year or something?
Aronimink, which is outside of Philly, yes. But usually it's like Conway Farm, so Illinois. It's usually there.
Right. So you're in the same part of the country. I think it bodes really well for him. And I have a funny feeling about Tony Finau this week, because again, he's one of those players like Bryson that has a great distance advantage. And so while we don't know a lot about course fit, we do know the distances of these holes, and there are definitely some advantages that Tony Finau is going to have this week that other players just won't have.
I do not say this often, so we might want to record this. I guess it is being recorded. I think it's a Tiger.
I hope it is.
I know, right?
Could you imagine Tiger Week?
If we were 32 minutes in and we hadn't recorded this, could you imagine? I've done that.
You know what? I believe it. You know what I really like about a great show is when the conversation beforehand the conversation while you're recording and the conversation after just all kind of flow together. That's the sign of a great show, because it's not forced. There's no facade. That's kind of what our show's like.
And you forget to press record, and then we just keep talking.
Yeah, just keep going.
Tiger Woods on Sunday at the Northern Trust had that look. He had the look. Goes out, birdies his first four holes. He passed the eye test for me, but more importantly, what I care about, he passed the stat test for me. The way he did it, the way he shot a 66, he was great off the tee. He was awesome with his irons. In fact, not only was that his best round since the 2019 Memorial 31 rounds ago, but if you just look at his ball striking numbers, Greg, his best since the 2018 Memorial 2 years ago. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, usually we'd say he just had his best round of the year. He can't do it again. I don't know if we say that about Tiger, or if we say if he can play the way he played on Sunday for 2, 3, maybe 4 rounds this week at the BMW Championship, like we're going to be saying his name a lot.
This is the thing that I find to be advantageous, not just that round that he played. Because look, he's been a little bit inconsistent. And I guess hearing those numbers, that makes me a little more optimistic. I mean, that is some great stuff. The concern for me with Tiger is he's got to put 4 rounds together. How is Tiger going to go ahead and put 4 rounds together? He's played great in first rounds. Second rounds have been a struggle for him. He's had some good third rounds, some not so good, but then, you know, one of the weekend rounds has been pretty good typically. So what are we going to get? Are we going to get a 4 round tournament out of him? Well, this is the thing that I think goes in his favor, and it's he's playing back-to-back weeks. He hasn't done that in a long time. He's going to be in the groove is a hope. So I'm cautiously optimistic about Tiger.
Okay, that's fair. I also love Matthew Wolf. And I think we talked about this a little bit on, might have been Saturday or Sunday on that pod. He shot the weirdest 77 I've ever seen on Saturday, where it was like 8 shots worse than the field. I did not see that coming because he's been playing so well. We've been talking about how mature his game actually is. A couple of good takeaways from this. He bounced back on Sunday, which I like to see. If he would have shot 77 on Sunday, I'd be like, I'm not so sure about this. But he goes back out, shoots a 67 on Sunday. Those 3 other rounds combined, 14 under par. The game is going to be volatile. That's fine. I understand that. He's a young player. Also, the success here at Olympia Fields. Like, he's one of the few guys who has any vibes at this place, and he's got winning vibes at this place.
Great memories, no question about it. And I think his fingerprint should fit. It should fit this kind of golf course. He's a good long iron player. He's a really long driver of the golf ball. I think those are going to be 2 important things. So I'm like you, where I like Wolf. Here's the other thing that I like about him. Without having a lot of course history, the veteran advantage is limited. There is still a veteran advantage. There always will be, because you understand how to prepare for an event. There are things you know as a PGA Tour regular, a veteran on the PGA Tour that a rookie or a second-year player isn't going to know. It's limited this week because you don't have the familiarity. If anything, Wolf and Hovland, who I also really like this week, those two players have maybe an advantage because they've played here more recently than any of the other pros. So I think Wolf and Hovland are my next two plays in that range. And maybe that 77 is just an aberration. Maybe he didn't sleep great. Maybe he slept, woke up on the wrong side of the bed. Who knows what happened? These guys are human. And that one bad round is clearly uncharacteristic.
I wonder what Matthew Wolf has for breakfast. We'll get him on the pod. We'll ask him, producer Jacob, call up, text Matthew Wolf. We'll get him online. Who else? I mean, Victor Hovland went nuclear for a while on Sunday. He gave a couple back towards the end, but I like that too. I mean, Harris English, we already talked about. He's $8,300. He has been phenomenal. I think he's underpriced. I think him and Matthew Wolf probably garner a lot of ownership, rightfully so, at the bottom half of the $8,000 range. I mean, is there anybody else here worth talking about? Because we saw Kisner play well again, back-to-back top 4 finishes. We saw Hatton play better than he's played recently. Like, anybody else here?
So the 4 guys that I like, we've talked about already. Harris English is definitely one. And then Finau, Hovland, and Wolf. Those are my definite guys. Guys I have questions about, and I'd love to get your take on, is Tyrrell Hatton and Kevin Kisner, who you mentioned, but also like a Paul Casey, who has been hitting it pretty good. Where do you stand on that, specifically Hatton?
Hatton, okay, so I think that we always knew there was regression coming for Tyrrell Hatton. He was having literally a historic season before that WGC event. A lot of the regression happened in 1 week. He goes like dead last at that WGC, misses the cut at the PGA Championship. I thought the way he played last week, which ended up being a tie for 25th, that's much more the type of round I'd see from Hatton. One day he might go super low. He might, he's a volatile kind of guy in both personality and game. And I think that's what you see from him. The Paul Casey thing scares me. I'll be honest with you. I don't like the narrative stuff, Greg, but he tweeted out himself. He is, quote, running on fumes. 6 straight weeks. This is now going to be his 7th straight week of golf. He tweeted that. He tweeted it.
Yeah, it's too much. I think that's a great point. He's got to be. That's just a lot of golf. You don't see guys on tour doing that. This is the time of year if you're going to where you might, because guys want to get into the playoffs. They want to get their points up. They want to get into a better position. And then you end up it's like, okay, I made it here, and now I'm completely gassed. So I tend to be with you on Casey there. Maybe this is a week to stay away.
It might also be showing up in his numbers too, because he's lost strokes on approach in each of his last 2 events. I had to go back 3 years before I found 2 consecutive events that Paul Casey lost strokes on approach. So he may be right. He is running on fumes at the moment. $7,000 range. I could live in the mid 8s. I could live in the upper 7s. I'll tell you what. It is led off by Matthew Fitzpatrick, Alex Noren. The bottom of the $7,000 range is Adam Hadwin, Joaquin Niemann, Mackenzie Hughes. And this is where I think you get the purest of value.
It's interesting you say that. I mean, I'm looking through and these guys aren't necessarily playing great. Like Gary Woodland gets my attention when he's down in the 7K range. He's a U.S. Open champion. He's got the distance, but he hasn't been playing very good. So first guy that comes to my mind that pops off the page to me is Russell Henley. Henley has been playing great golf, and he's one of the best iron players on the PGA Tour. So there is no question a strength. What is he, like 2nd strokes gained approach this year? He has a crazy strokes gained number for the year.
He's first in the restart on strokes gained approach. First.
Right. So he was tied 9th last week. So there's definitely some upside for him. And like we say, especially when you get down into value picks, you always want to be looking for a guy that's on an uptick, whether it's maybe a statistical uptick or a results uptick. Those are the guys that are likely to really compete and contend. So Henley's the first guy on my list because he has that. He has some really strong form coming in, but he also has an asset that is great. It's an elite, quote unquote, elite iron play so far this year, definitely since the restart. So he's my number one play in this range.
Henley was very high on my list as well. The other guy is Ryan Palmer, who, okay, this is where this is the intersection of narrative and stats for me. Greg was such on he was frozen in such a great screen grab. I hope we grabbed that. Your video feed was so good.
Oh man.
This is the intersection of narrative and stats for me. So do you remember he missed the cut at the Workday Charity Open and he flew home and he like flipped the script, right? Like he got like a swing lesson from his coach. He pulled out a putter that he hasn't used since college. Like he completely changed everything. And oh, by the way, since then, he is 2nd on tour in strokes gained from tee to green. He's like 6th in strokes gained total since that moment. So like, this is the perfect combination of guys who love narratives. Like if Mark and I were to pick the one guy this week, it would be Ryan Palmer because we both get what we want here.
He definitely loves a narrative, but another, a really well-rounded player. The putting is maybe a little touch and go. That's definitely his weakness, but he has been hitting it great. And it's shown up in his form. Again, it was 2nd at the Memorial, as you mentioned, tied 15th in Memphis and tied 8th last week at the Northern Trust. So another player in the 7K range at a value type price, who's definitely on the rise. And I think that a Ryan Palmer who drives the ball the way he does is likely to give himself a chance. And he seems to be just in a great attitude, which look, when you're playing great, you're going to be happy, but you see it, you're seeing a lot of smiling out of him. You're seeing a guy that looks like he's really enjoying himself. So those were the two guys, if you saw on the run, those were the two guys that I really liked in this range. Then there's another player who I have some questions about. And that would be Corey Connors. What do you make of Corey Connors?
Man, I mean, he fits the mold for guys that I normally like, right? They're ball strikers. They can't putt. I think that it's finally great that he broke his stretch of two or three. I think it was two missed cuts in a row, finished top 25 last week. The only time he's played the BMW Championship, he finished in the top 10. Again, different course, but like I get it. So I'm fine with that. He usually fits the type of mold. Let me throw a question back at you. Alex Noren has now been piling up top 25s and has three top 10s in his last four starts. Now, this is hard for me, Greg, because he does it the opposite way of Corey Connors. He's all short game, which scares the crap out of me. But like, I look at the results and I'm like, wow, Alex Noren, like all these top 10s, that's great.
And it's great scores, right? Yeah. 3M Open, 67, 69, and then two 66s on the weekend. At the PGA Championship, the one round that really derailed him was Saturday. And it was that was a tough day. Probably the toughest day during that major. 67, 69, 73, 67 on Sunday. And then last week, 69, 68, 64, 68. This is some consistency. But I tend to agree with you, Rick, where the concern is we're going to a place where we don't really know. We don't know much about it. We're trying to analyze what's going to happen in a tournament where we don't know the playing field. So that presents a challenge. And in that situation, I generally like great tee to green players. You're talking about greens you're unfamiliar with. So it puts a little bit of a premium on ball striking, in my opinion. And so that would be my concern with Alex Noren. That being said, I love recent form. And when a guy's playing good, when a guy's playing well, I tend to go with it. So I think Alex Noren is a play.
All right. I'm kind of split. I could go either way on him. I don't have a hot take. Last guy for me in this range would be Jason Kokrak, who I love that this guy just goes full ice in the veins, makes eagle on the 72nd hole last week, which is basically what he had to do to get himself into this week. Now, he's got work to do. He's going to have to finish. I don't even know what he's going to have to finish to find a way to Eastlake. It's going to be something ridiculous. But back-to-back top 15s, three times in the last 4 years he's played the BMW Championship. He hasn't finished worse than 19th in any of them. Like, you know, we're at $7,500. I think you could do worse.
So I really like Kokrak. I like, as I said, I like recent form. So you have a guy who has two top 15 finishes back to back, and that's great. But before that, it was a tied 44th, a miscut at the PGA, a WD, three miscuts before that. So the play wasn't great coming in. And then it's like he just found a way through maybe willpower, or he just grinded out a way to get to the BMW Championship. And when it culminates with an eagle on the 72nd hole of the Northern Trust, that can be like, okay, I reached the peak. I've done it. And there can be an exhale. So I have some concerns with Kokrak, but at his price, I think it could be worth the risk.
$6,000. Range. This is where things get really interesting, Greg. My boy Lonto Griffin, 6,900, along with Brian Harman, all the way down to the min price homies, Jim the Herminator and Carlos Ortiz at the dead min. I don't know. What do you? I got a couple of guys here, Greg. What do you think?
Well, funny to mention, I think Brian Harman's playing okay. So he had a nice finish last week. I think he shot like 64 in the final round. So Brian Harman would be a guy I have interest in. I think Taylor Gooch is the guy that's playing the best in this class.
Yes.
So Taylor Gooch is the guy that I'm looking for. Okay. Recent form. He's playing good. He's in good form. He's hot. And then the other guy that I had a question about, and I'll let you kind of go through this however you'd like, but Robbie Shelton has interest me as well. He's been popping up a little bit more often lately. Outside of that, I have a lot of question marks in this range, and I haven't really found a lot of great plays other than those three guys and maybe our boy Sebastian Munoz.
Oh, boy. Okay. I do agree. I think Taylor Gooch is objectively – like the best player in this range, whether that you just want to look at the results, you want to look at the top 20, the top 25s. I think he's got 4 in his last 6 starts. I think objectively you could be like, okay, Taylor Gooch, I feel pretty comfortable in a tier that I don't feel comfortable with. Robbie Shelton is interesting. You mentioned he's been popping up. That is the perfect word for it. He goes out and finishes in a 29 on Sunday. There's your peak if you want that, Greg, to even get into this event. But like, we've seen this from Robbie Shelton before. Maybe not a 29 for 9 holes, but like, you know, he pops up at the 3M Open. He finishes 3rd. That was just a couple of weeks ago. I mean, he's done this occasionally where his name is on the first page of the leaderboard. And when you are, what, $6,400, that is very valuable.
It's worth the risk. It's definitely on the rise, right?
Correct. Sebastian Munoz. I don't know if we've talked about this. Sebastian Munoz for 2 straight weeks has been my path to victory in the for the $500,000 on DraftKings. And so I've watched like every shot of this guy for 2 weeks and it is painstaking. Okay. He goes off on Thursday and starts like 7 birdies in a row. I'm counting my hundreds of thousands. He played the back 9, I think over par. He made double on 18 at some point. Anyway, that's just a tangent, but listen, I like Munoz a lot more in showdown, which we rarely talk about, than I do in an entire tournament, because he has shown me recently he can't put 4 rounds together. And I hope I'm wrong, because I'll probably find a way to get back to Munoz, but like, he just cannot put 4 rounds together. But he might be the best guy on the course for 1 or 2 rounds, and he might be the worst guy on the course for 1 or 2 rounds.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But in this range, I really like the upside. I'm looking for guys with a high ceiling. That's how you win these tournaments, right? Like you said, he's your path to $500,000 in an early retirement. Well, the thing that's what you need in this range. You need guys that have really high ceilings. And unfortunately, the risk you're taking is, well, the floor is the floor of the field. So that's where you run into a risk. But I will say I like Munoz in this event because it's a non-cut event. So you know you're going to get 4 rounds. And it just gives you more 9-hole segments where he could maybe make 7 birdies in a row, right? He could go on a little streak. It just increases the likelihood of that. So I may take a boom or bust kind of risk down here with the Sebastian Munoz. But I do think that Brian Harman is the safest, the most boring pick. But he is playing pretty well. So I think he's a fair play. And I think Taylor Gooch is another safe play in this range.
I think the no cut thing is more interesting for these guys down here. So you need guys that can certainly make birdies, might maybe sneak an eagle in here or there. That goes a long way in scoring. But I mean, I guess what I'm looking for out of these guys, like if I rostered any one of these guys and they finished T24, I think I'd be thrilled, right? Like that's what I'm asking in a field of 70. And I'm not sure that's much to ask or too much to ask, but I think if you could pencil me in for a Robbie Shelton T24 right now, I'd probably have him in every single lineup.
So what do you look for to get that? Do you try to go with maybe a safer guy down here, or are you going with a boom or bust guy?
Man, I guess if I'm playing Rory at the top, I'd probably take a safer guy. If I'm starting my lineups with like, I don't know, Berger and Scottie Scheffler, who I think are on the safer side, maybe I'd be like, all right, Harry Higgs, let's see if he can do it this week. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I think it depends on the rest of the lineup, but I have not built a single lineup yet, Greg. I think it's stars and scrubs time. So I will probably have a lot of these guys, you know?
I think you're right.
Think about it. There's like 20 guys under 7,000 in a 70 man field. A couple of these guys are going to finish in the top 20. Like it's going to happen. They have to, right? They're not all going to finish 50th through 70th. So I think you have to try to find, whether it's Gooch, whether it's Streelman, whether it's Shelton, like sprinkle in these guys and pair them with the studs, because I think that's how you win.
You're a huge Streelman guy. Is he a safe guy down in this range?
Man, I am a huge Streelman guy. I think in general, he is not safe at all, but I think amongst these peers, he might be safer than other guys, believe it or not. Yeah. But like in a normal PGA Tour field where like Streelman's like $7,500, he's not safe because he's the guy who finishes 2nd at the Travelers, then he misses the cut, and then he pops up somewhere. So like, no, in general, but I think when you look at, I mean, Tyler Duncan, Adam Long, Danny Lee, Michael Thompson, I mean, is Streelman safer than them? Yeah, sure.
And he's a really good ball striker, right? Yeah. Tee to green. So that's why I like that. That's why that pick feels safer. Not so much of his results, but what he does with his statistical makeup.
That's Greg Ducharme. This has been the BMW Championship DFS preview. You can find Greg on Twitter at TheRealGFD. We're going to be back all week long. And then, Greg, we're going to have to figure out how to wait till you see the salaries next week for the Tour Championship when DJ is 15,500. Wait till that happens. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I can't wait.
So I'm pretty sure JT was 15,500 last week going into the Tour Championship.
I mean, you got a huge advantage, but it's a very interesting thing. It's opportunistic. I know we got to get going here, but there's a lot of opportunity there because you're talking about passing very few guys, right? There are five guys. If you're sitting at 4 under par, there are only five guys ahead of you. The fact that it's a 6-shot lead and the best player on the PGA Tour, you know, there's a limited number of players. It's not like you're 6 back of 20 guys. So opportunity.
We'll leave it at that. You can find me on Twitter at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut, and we'll catch you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.